This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So, yeah, if you're just showing up here, this is the first official Foul Front live podcast. If you haven't heard, Thomas and I are the co-host of the Foul Front podcast now, and we've been, we've been putting out some podcasts, since January?
I was about to say, I think we're coming up on like a year. I'm pretty sure we were talking about North Dakota early goose hunting last year, which is only like 2.5 months, 3 months away at this point. So,
well, I mean, like consistently though, I mean, we've been putting out at least monthly podcasts here the last few months, but yeah, I guess we did. We did start a couple of them last summer.
Yeah. Consistency is not our strong suit, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, it's the off season. We got a lot of stuff to do.
We say that during waterfowl season. That's our excuse during waterfowl season too, is that we have a lot of stuff to do, and now we're in the off season like, oh, we got a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah, that's true. Luckily most of my stuff, I mean, my hunting has came to an end here. I finished out turkey season with my second tom. We were only getting two tags this year, and I was able to get him. I mean, he was close and came right in on a rope or on a line, and so yeah, we're done with turkey season now. It's, I guess, fishing and off season projects. Yeah, I guess my audio was out when a couple people asked about morels. I did find some Monday. We finally got some rain, and I went out and walked, and I think I found about 5 pounds or so. Actually had some morels, sauteed morels with a dash of rosemary, and I put those on some antelope loin I had for lunch today. So that was pretty tasty.
What are you finding, like the big yellows right now?
Yeah, we were so dry. Most of the state's been super dry when the grays typically would show up. So now it's just yellows now that there's moisture. Yep. And I would give them a week, maybe 10 days tops before they're all done. So,
yep.
But my theory on morels, and I don't, there's probably some scientific evidence to it too, but when you find like a dead tree that's recently died or been cut down or knocked over by whatever, go there the next year after, if you have adequate conditions, and you'll find morels. Because that's where I found a bunch where, you know, where I found them this year and where I found them in the past is where those trees have been disturbed. So, little morel tip.
Yep. There actually is some science behind that, and I might butcher this, but basically, like, morels is a fungus that, like, the mycelium lives under the leaves in the soil and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, when a tree dies, that creates stress on that mycelium. I'm guessing it has some sort of symbiotic relationship with the tree. And so it puts up those mushrooms to spread the spores, since it's the mycelium is no longer going to be able to thrive in that area. Like, it's the same reason that if when they have big wildfires out west, the next year you go to those big wildfire burns and there will be morels everywhere, because they put up they're trying to put up their spores to spread out of that fire area.
Yeah, makes sense. I guess, I think I've heard, like you said, mycelium mat, and they tap into the trees and there's like an exchange of sugars, I think. And then the mycelium helps collect water for the tree is how that works. But yeah, once the tree's like dead, it's like, oh crap, we gotta get out of here. So it shoots up a mushroom and shoots spores everywhere. But
Yeah, I actually have a pretty cool story about that. Like, in Virginia, we always look for dead elm trees. Like, if you find a dead elm tree, go there the next year. Like, almost 100% of the time, you're going to find morels there. And my parents live in the middle of a city. Like, think of a middle city, like, basically townhouses, like, just concrete jungle. And so we would always obviously come back from the mountains or wherever with morels. And our neighbors right behind us had, like, a little yard box that had an elm tree in it. And they cut it down. And the next year, we get back from picking morels up in the mountains. I was like 8 years old. I was like, hey, Dad, look, there's morels right there. And he's like, no way. Like, we're in the middle of the concrete jungle. Like, there's not morels right there. And, like, sure enough, like, obviously, we had probably brought the spores there. The spores were probably weren't spores there to begin with. But we brought the spores there. And then when that elm tree died, it sent up like 8 morels. So pretty wild to find morels in the middle of the city.
Yeah, see, I don't have elm trees here. I've got hackberries and like a cedar tree in my backyard next to my garden. And every year, like, you know, when I'm cleaning the morels, I'll dump all the water just out there. So I'm hoping eventually they'll pop, you know, something will pop up and I won't have to look as hard for them, but nothing yet.
Yeah. Might be worth like trying to do like a little burn there this fall or something.
Cut the tree down.
Yeah, or just do that.
Oh.
What questions did we get on your community post?
Okay,
should we go ahead and answer those?
Yeah, I don't know if you got any on yours. We only had two here. And
yeah, I don't think I had any. I think I tried to like, I don't think you could like comment on mine. Like, it was weird how it shared.
Yeah, that's just YouTube. I guess if anyone has any questions, drop them in the chat. We'll get to them. But Dan O'Brien asks, what size bismuth would you recommend for geese and divers? So
I'd say like number three is number fours. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you could use number twos, but I mean, that the bismuth, my experience with bismuth is that it hits pretty hard. So I would think, I mean, threes, fours. Like, I'd try and shoot him in the head anyway. Like, obviously, you don't want to shoot a big fat honker or a diver in the body or the wings if you can help it. So, I just think go with a little bit higher pattern density and aim for the head.
Yeah, I'd say probably fives for divers. Just, you know, that's what I typically use and haven't had any issues there. And then for geese, fours or like Boss, what I use has a 3-5 mix. That's pretty good on honkers. At least for me, it has been.
Yep.
Okay. And then the other one is, seems like both you guys are using inertia-driven shotguns. Do you prefer them over gas-operated?
I don't think I've ever owned a gas gun, so.
See, I actually use both during the season. My Versamax is gas. And my Benelli's are inertia. So that's a tough one for me.
I just like the simplicity of how easy inertia guns are to clean. I have like taken apart a gas gun before trying to clean a buddy's gun, and like came out, like, it ended up being like 25 pieces on the floor or something, versus my Franke, you break it all apart and it's 6, 7, 8 pieces. So I like the simplicity of the inertia guns.
You gotta clean all the gas ports and stuff, and it can get filthy, especially if it's like one of the few guns you use over a season. So I don't know. I'd probably just go inertia.
Yeah. I wish someone, like, I'm sure there probably is, but like my only issue with the Benelli Franke inertia guns is just the locking bolt head. Like, there has to be a better design where it doesn't, because like that's where people always talk about the Benelli click. The Benelli click comes from you just getting like just enough dirt in there where that locking bolt head won't rotate and lock into place. And if they would find a way to make that bolt head a little bit more consistent, I think it would make their guns a little bit more reliable.
Public Land Waterfowler says he's going to buy me a bead for that Versamax. when I bought it, it had two beads on it. It had a, you know, the one in the middle of the rail there. I can't even think of the name for it right now. And then one at the end. And over time, they've both fallen off. So I don't really need them.
Yeah,
I'll take them if someone's going to replace them for me.
I mean, they say you shoot, like, you should shoot better without a bead. Like, for like the principles of shotgunning, like, a bead is totally irrelevant. Like, the only thing you really need a bead for is turkey hunting. But like, when you're wing shooting, you should not be focused on that bead at all.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. Oh, okay. Let's see. I'm sure we didn't miss anything.
Sorry about the sniffling. I got first day of allergies up here, so I got to start taking some allergy meds.
Oh boy. Is that, was it up there where you got like super allergic to, was it wild rice?
Wild rice, yep. Yeah, I went out picking wild rice and broke out in hives. That was not fun. I also like I didn't end up getting any wild rice. Like, I was too early, so like all there was just like pollen everywhere, and the rice was still like pretty green. Just like just an abomination. I mean, I learned, like, I won't, like, if I go to pick wild rice, I know to wait. But yeah, made some mistakes that night. It literally looked like I went to the bar and just got sucker punched. Like, the whole one side of my face was just swollen.
Yeah, I think you sent us a video or something of that. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, I got a good picture of it somewhere.
See, I'm lucky where I don't, like, the only thing I'm super allergic to is like poison ivy and, you know, oak and sumac, those three with the aerosol oils or whatever, however you pronounce it. I like it. I have to go to like to the doctor if I get it to get steroids for it, but I don't feel like the breathing, you know, all the pollen and stuff doesn't affect me.
Yeah, I think that's probably from a side effect of growing up in the concrete jungle. Is like, I'm not allergic to a ton of stuff, but like grass and pollen just tear me up.
Yeah. So we heard about my turkey season, Thomas. I know you missed one at, what was it, 5 feet or something?
5 yards, yeah.
Whatever. And
I don't even know if 5 feet would be possible. Well, I mean, obviously it would be possible. Like, you're shooting a
extra full slug choke.
Yeah. Minnesota's been pretty good. Like, it's so different up here. I mean, the part of Minnesota I'm in is literally flat as a pancake. Like, you can find some creeks and river draws, but like, literally, if you got up above the tree line, like above the trees here, got up 100 yards in the air, you'd be able to see 10, 20 miles in any direction. There's no terrain. So it's way different than what I'm used to back home. Their turkeys are also weird up here, because the only way they survive the winter is by like hanging out around cattle yards and stuff like that. So like at the beginning of the season, they're in like these 300, 400, 500 bird flocks, and they act more like cattle because they've literally been living with cows all winter and like eating corn out of their shit. But like this time of year, it's more typical turkey hunting. The birds spread out. It's easterns up here, so it's not that far off from what I'm used to, but just like very different terrain and very different wintering styles or wintering behaviors, I guess. So I went out. We actually did like a cool little turkey camp trip 2 weekends ago now. It was me, Corey, his daughter, and then her boyfriend. And so we split up in the morning, and Corey and his daughter went out, and me and her boyfriend went out. And I called in 3 toms for him. He shot one of those, and I did not have a tag, unfortunately. So the other two just kind of walked around and were checking out their buddy. And then Corey and his daughter didn't get one, unfortunately. And I actually just bought my tag yesterday because it's weird up here. You have to like pick a week. So like they have like A season, B season, like A through E. So like their season runs from, I think, like the second week in April all the way through the end of May. But like you can hunt, let's say you pick A week. The A week, you get to hunt that first week of the season, and then you can't hunt again until the last week of the season. And it's only a one bird season up here. So I decided to just wait until the end of the season to buy mine. I'll be able to hunt these next 2 weeks. Guess how much a non-resident turkey tag costs up here? I don't know what it costs in Nebraska, but I was pretty surprised by the price up here.
$200.
Oh, no. It was $97, but still, I thought that was super high.
I thought that was that sounds cheap. I know we have a quota here. Like they had 10,000 tags available and they sold out pretty quick.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah. Which I'm not opposed to it. Like obviously this area it was like part of the introduction or reintroduction program. Like these turkeys were not here 30, 40 years ago. They were brought in by either Minnesota DNR or National Wildlife Turkey Foundation. And so like the population is growing and like I don't have a problem with the season or the cost of the tag. I was just surprised by it being $97 to kill one turkey.
So are you gonna go back out the last week of the season then?
Yeah, I can hunt anytime these next 2 weeks. I went out riding around this morning, but it was super foggy. It's cool around here though. Like there's not a ton of public ground right where I'm at, but there's a bunch of public ground like 20, 30 minutes away. So I'll just go burn down there in the morning, ride around. There's so many fields here too. Like a lot of the times it's like all the woods are public and then all the fields are private. So like you just go ride around, see birds in a private field, go get in the public woods and just try and call them into the woods. So pretty like fun, I guess. Not a super hard style of turkey hunting, I'd say.
Okay, we got a couple questions in the chat here, Thomas.
All right.
So I don't know if you want to answer this or not. Did you ever float the James River? This guy hunted in Charles City.
Charles City. Yeah, I like grew up hunting Charles City. I don't really haven't hunted down there the last few years. I typically don't talk about like specific rivers, obviously, like just kind of like a no-no in my book, but like there's good hunting. I think there's good hunting to be had on any river in Virginia. The thing I would say about the James is that there's a lot of boat traffic out there with bass tournaments and stuff like that, and not a lot of food. So the best success I've ever had out there is in super duper cold weather.
Okay. And then Peyton asks, any new products or anything this upcoming season? So I just got something new that I'm really excited about this week. I went to the greenhouse to pick out all my my peppers and tomatoes and stuff. And they have a new, at least to this area, new breed, new hybrid, whatever you want to call it, of jalapeno pepper called a Megatron. And I asked like the lady working, like, okay, what's the deal with this? And she said it's the same kick as a jalapeno, but it's bigger and it's bred specifically for jalapeno poppers. So I am pumped to go get on some doves and then hopefully these things like grow exactly how they're supposed to. Cause like I've grown decent sized jalapenos before, but you know, it seems like they never hold the dove breast or the teal breast and the cream cheese and then all the bacon too. So if it does all that, I'm going to be really impressed. But so I'm excited about that. And then I'm sure I'm going to really get into more. Well, I have been the last couple of years at Snow Goose. So I'm sure I'm going to buy a lot more Snow Goose gear, get a lot more of that. And I don't know. We'll see what else I can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm going to get it. I don't think I'm going to get a new gun this year. I'll say that. I think I've had enough new guns for a little bit. If I did, it'd be like a 16 gauge or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I need a 16. I'm trying to track down a 32 and a 24, but that's like almost next to impossible to do. So
you're never even going to be able to get shells for them if you do get them.
I've got a buddy.
You have to hand load.
I've got a buddy that reloads, and he said if I can do that, if I can find one of those guns, he would hand load them for me. He would hand load bismuth for me.
Hmm.
So
are the holes easy enough to come by?
Well, they sell boxes of shells for I think both gauges overseas. So
okay,
I would assume you could find them here and there, and I would.
Hmm.
I if you reached out to some of them companies, I wonder if they want it. Like custom send you some or something. Like if they're sending them across the ocean, why wouldn't they just ship them here around the States too if someone wants them?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know.
Yep.
You got any new products or anything you're adding to your arsenal legally, I guess?
Yeah, like dog stuff. I haven't even really thought about it that much. Like I've been working hard with him on training, but we haven't been making the best progress, I'd say. Like we're making progress, but it's slow. I have a ton of faults in my training. It's not something that really comes natural to me. Like when I watch Corey train, like it's very intuitive for him. He just like, he's very good at reading dogs and knowing how to get what he wants out of them. And I just struggle with that. So there's been a big time learning process. So I haven't like even really thought about like this hunting season with him, but I'm sure I'll be picking up like dog stand, probably modifying the kayak a little bit to have him hunt out of it if he hunts this season. Like I obviously really want him to hunt, but if he's not ready, I'm not going to rush him into it. I feel pretty confident that at the very minimum, I'd be able to get him on some like easy walk-in style hunts. But ideally I'd love to get him hunting out of the kayak this season. I think that'd be really fun. Besides that, we're working on a bunch of new stuff for DRC. I can't talk about all of it in depth yet, but like new duck calls coming out, new goose calls, looking at doing some like customized calls too. So like maybe some custom runs of like YouTube specific calls. So like, could make 10 calls for Matt and have his logo on him and stuff like that. Or like I'm planning on doing stuff like that. So a lot of cool stuff up here. I love working up here. The opportunities are endless. So a lot of fun stuff that we're working on right now for the call shop and branching out from that as well.
Nice. Okay. Either of you know anyone that hunts or fishes out of a Hobie kayak?
I kind of do.
Go ahead, Thomas.
I don't directly, but my buddy Nolan, he does like kayak bass fishing professionally, so he has a Hobie. He hasn't hunted out of it yet, but I think he's planning on trying it some this season. But his younger brother actually has used it before and actually has like used it jump shooting, which is something I've always thought of. Like ever since I got into jump shooting, I was like, you know, what would be sweet would be a pedal drive kayak where you can literally have your gun at the ready all the time and just pedal with your feet, have some sort of little blind to block your knees. So there's next to no movement. And those Hobies have a sweet rudder on them too. My hang up was always that there's a lot of sticks, down logs, stuff like that in the rivers that I float. So I felt like that'd be a pain for obviously having that rudder sticking down in the water and having to portage and stuff like that. Those kayaks are extremely heavy. I've helped Nolan load and unload his several times. But from what Nolan's younger brother has said, it's extremely effective. Like, he puts up a little board in front of his knees and can pedal right up on puddle ducks using that. And then he said, like, for divers, you don't even need a board. Like, you literally just pedal right at them and they'll let you get within range. So, probably not everybody's preferred style of hunting, but I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to try at least once.
Yeah. So I guess, I don't really know them, but I follow them on Instagram. Midwest Fisher Gal. She's also a kayak bass angler, really good. And she uses Hobies. So there you go. I guess
Kristen Fisher?
Yes. Yes.
She's from Nebraska. Yeah. She fishes like that same circuit that my buddy Nolan fishes.
Yeah. She's always got posts on about Hobies and stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're so sweet. Like, my Nolan came down and fished with me actually on the James a few times this spring, and like, he has a little trolling motor mount for it that'll push him like 6 miles an hour. So like, we hooked up the Old Town to the back of it, and like, we're running against the current going like 4 miles an hour with a little trolling motor. Like, we went floating down a different river, and he's like fishing circles around me. He caught like 15 fish to my one, just because like, he can just slide into an eddy, hold himself with the pedals, and just like fish the seam perfectly. Meanwhile, I'm like cast 10 paddles, cast. Like, they're sweet rigs. They just cost like $8,000 or $5,000 at least.
Okay. Favorite decoy brand. That's a
easy final approach.
It is. They've got some excellent stuff, I will say that. I got those flocked head mallards from them like a couple of years ago, and I don't baby them. Like, you know, you can put them in a slotted bag or something. The flocking has held up excellent after 2 years, so I was impressed.
Yeah.
And most of them, the teal decoys aren't like this, but the other ones are that rubberized plastic. There's a couple other brands out there. Avian X is probably the one the other one that comes to mind when I think of that. But I love that plastic, because that hard plastic, it seems like you always find those ones just broken in, you know, in public marshes or something. I'm not going to badmouth any brand specifically that I've found that just get brittle and break. But also that rubberized plastic, it eats shot like nothing else. Like, I've got some decoys with you can see the shot pellets stuck in it, and they're still, you know, they're still floating. So I'm impressed with those.
No, I've been very impressed with their entire lineup, like everything they've come out with. I think the colors on the wood duck might have been a little off, but besides that, like, everything else has been sweet. I'm really looking forward to seeing them come out with some divers here soon. I think they'll probably knock it out of the park on the divers. They definitely like go above and beyond to get really expert carvers for their decoys. And I think it shows, like, the widgeon, the pin, everything looks incredible, really.
Those widgeon with their mouth open, those things are sweet. And the
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I completely agree.
I just want some to, like, I want one just to display, because it looks cool. But
yeah, like, in all reality, that type of stuff, like, probably makes absolutely zero. It makes absolutely zero difference to ducks. Like, if a duck's close enough to realize that detail, like, he's well within your decoys, which, like, I guess I shouldn't say it doesn't matter, because, like, if you want to go out and land flocks of 30 birds, like, yeah, having really realistic decoys does help. But, like, I think a lot of the stuff that I really enjoy about them is just, like, the functionality of them and how durable they are. Like, I've had, I don't know, 4 or 5 dozen other decoys for going on 2 seasons now, and I have not had a decoy fail on me. Like, haven't had a keel break, haven't had one of those hook clips rip out, like, nothing. So, really durable stuff, which is what I care about the most.
Yeah, you're not not the easiest on gear, I think, just like I am, you know, kind of beat it around.
Yeah, which, absolutely.
I mean, you're going to use it, so I want stuff that holds up.
Yep, I completely agree.
Okay. After your first full season of chasing snows, what do you think worked and what didn't? And what would you change for next season? Okay, so I went out 9 times snow goose hunting this year, I believe, is what it ended up being. And I shot 4 personally, and then I saw 13 total get shot over 9 hunts. So I found out a lot of things that didn't work. Honestly, I think part of it was just the year. We had a lot of adults for a long time because of the snow line that was up in the Dakotas. It held them down here, so they were well-versed. And a lot of the days, you know, I didn't really take off a lot of days to go. Well, I think I took 1 day off to go snow goose hunting. All the other ones were just weekend hunts. So I didn't really hit the good, great weather days where it was like blowing wind and I'd be driving around and I'd see them 10 yards off the, you know, off the fields or even landing on roads in some places. So I didn't hit the great weather days, unfortunately. And our juvies pushed through really quick because once that snow line melted, they were here and gone super quick. As far as what I've talked to other people that were more successful, you know, I did a lot of laying out in socks. We mixed in some full bodies. I heard a lot of people had success with smaller full body spreads. Some of them were hunting pits. Some of them may have been laying out as well. And I heard they used less motion, less flappers, less silo socks, all that. So I don't know. I mean, that's part of the fun of hunting. And, you know, especially when you're doing something more like newer, like snow goose is to me, is figuring it out. So, you know, I've gotten on a couple, you know, where they just couple hunts in the past where they just come in and they cup in and it's just, you know, what you dream of as a snow goose hunter. And just seeing that, it just drives you to get back out there and do that again. But anytime you shoot one snow goose, I've found, oh, even just one duck, one goose, anything when you're out hunting, that's a great day in my book. So the key is figuring out how to get more than one now. And I want, you know, I want them decoying. I don't want to just sky bust them at 70 yards and, you know, call that good. So that's how I want to hunt them. But yeah. So hopefully that answered your question.
Do Blake and Alex hunt them at all around your area?
Yeah, I actually went out with Blake and Alex a couple times. We, on the lead push, we set out like a 1,000 or 2,000 sock spread in frozen ground, and it was a migrator spread. Took us a couple, like, I think there was 5 or 6 of us, and it took us several hours to set it out, and then we ended up taking it down like a week later, because I think even when they would hunt it when I wasn't there, and they only got a handful of birds, so they got smoked too. Yeah, this is Thomas from Hoke Outdoors, Kenyon, asking if that was you. So,
no.
Okay. Oh, yeah, this is a good topic. Is Nebraska cracking down on out-of-state hunters just like other states? Elliot was saying Kansas might only allow non-resident hunters to hunt waterfowl on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday in 2024. Yeah, Kansas is talking about that. They had it on their commission meeting a week or two ago now. They're talking... Yeah. Nothing's finalized. There's still a lot of stuff that has to go through. Elliot would be, and Josh even from Outdoor Limits would be better resources because they pay more attention to that because they hunt Kansas way more often than I do. But yeah, they're making some big changes. Nebraska, as far as I know, other than on some like big game stuff, turkey and deer and stuff, they are cracking down on non-residents, mainly limiting tags for non-residents. Waterfowl, I have heard nothing on currently. We don't have a lot of public land, so a lot of people really don't come here unless you're with a guide service, kind of how that works. But there is, you know, I mean, there's a fair amount of pressure. That actually is, depends where you go, and early season especially, there is a ton of pressure. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting because, like, most states around us are limiting non-residents, so it wouldn't surprise me if in the next couple of years, Nebraska's right there with them to follow suit.
What other states are doing it?
Well, South Dakota has the non-resident deal.
North Dakota's only 2 weeks at the max, yeah, so I guess that is somewhat restrictive.
I want to say Missouri might be something. There's something with Missouri. I don't know if it's like blind draws or something. And maybe that's
it's
just
blind draws,
but
non-residents can't. I don't think non-residents can enter into their blind draws. Like if you go and hunt one of the areas where they have assigned blinds, I think you just have to four line it as non-res.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, are you, you probably weren't old enough even, or like probably didn't, I don't know if like the internet was even around. Like, I don't, when did North, do you know when South Dakota implemented those regulations? And like, was there any sort of outcry? Cause like, they've been the standalone state up until this point that like had like really serious restrictions on non-residents as a whole. Like, obviously Arkansas has the WMA stuff, but like, you can still go hunt federal land there. You can go hunt the rivers. Like, there's a lot of ways to circumvent that. Like, South Dakota is pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, I don't, I want, I can't remember when that lottery thing went into effect, but I don't think it was, you know, it wasn't, it's still fairly new is what I'm trying to say, I think.
Okay. I mean, ever since I've got into waterfowl hunting, like, and I guess it probably like in the last 5 years, I would have paid attention to anything like that. Like, it's always been like that. So,
so when I first started going out hunting, I wasn't actually hunting, because I was only like three. We still had the point system here in Nebraska. So instead of a daily bag limit of this many birds, yeah, Nebraska was one of the last states to get rid of the point system. And I want to say it was right before 2000. It was like 99, 98, somewhere in there. So, yeah, I wish I would have saved some of them duck guides from back then, you know, like my dad. I wish he would have saved some of those. But, yeah, when I first was started out going out duck hunting, we were on the point system.
Huh, that's pretty wild. Bring back the point system.
Oh, man, that, I don't know. That's, there's, I don't, I'm not even going to touch that. There's always like online debates about how the zones here are in Nebraska. So I can just see a lot of people up in arms about the point system too.
Well, like it takes a lot of, or it put a lot of trust in the citizen is, I guess, the way to say it. Cause like, from my understanding, like, let's say a mallard hen's an 85 point bird, you get 100 points in total. You go out and shoot two teal and then shoot a mallard hen, you're supposed to stop right then because you're over 100 points. But, like, in let's say you went out and shot nine teal, you're at 90 points, you could still shoot a mallard hen at 90 points. You're well over 100 points, but you didn't have over 100 points when you shot her. So, like, I think maybe I'm completely wrong. I thought that's the way it worked. Like, because I'd heard that basically it was tough to prove that people were doing stuff incorrectly on the point system. Because there was a way that it was set up to stop people from targeting specific birds or shooting, like, by making mallard hens such a heavy point bird, like, they were trying to stop people from shooting them, basically.
Yeah, and there's still people, like the old timers, across the state, they'll talk about game wardens. They would carry a body thermometer to put in the duck, so they could test, when you shot that hen. Now, if that would actually hold up in court, I don't know, but that was the whole urban legend back in the day, is the game warden would carry, or at least some game wardens would carry with those body thermometers.
That's pretty wild.
Oh, here's one for you, Thomas, while we're kind of on the topic of bag limits. Have y'all heard if the Atlantic as a whole is going to four mallards? North Carolina changed their daily limit to four for 23-24.
Yep. So, Atlantic population mallards are back up. Like, I think 1.2 million was the survey last year, which is really good. I think I'm almost certain it was north of a million at least. And the thing that I saw that like is kind of throwing me for a loop is that, so like the way that they do the limits now is based off models, basically. Like, they do a duck survey. They say, hey, we think we have approximately 1.1 million breeding mallards in the Atlantic Flyway. They then plug that into a model, and that model tells, just spits out a number and says, all right, this is how many birds can be harvested sustainably. What I read is that, like, the model said that we should be at 4 birds 90 something percent of the time, or like 80% of the time. So I don't know how that's going to work. Like, is it going to be 4 birds from here on out if the numbers stay consistent, like 4 birds for 4 years, and then all of a sudden we go back down to 2 or 3 for a year? I don't really know how that works. But yeah, from my understanding, the Atlantic Flyway as a whole is going back to 4 mallards next year. And then also our goose limits are going back up. So like in Virginia, the AP zone will be back up to a 2-bird 45-day season. That'll be the same on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. And then I'm guessing up in New York, they'll go back to like a 3-bird 45-day season, or maybe even a 3-bird 60-day season. So hoping to see Steve Nunn's make some videos again. They went to a 1-bird season just like we did this past year. And it seemed like he kind of quit making videos. So hoping to see some stuff from up in his neck of the woods. I always enjoy watching other stuff from the Atlantic Flyway. So,
oh yeah. I love watching Steve's videos. He does a great job. So if you guys haven't checked out Steve Nunn's, definitely go check him out. He's got some really, I don't good think shot. He posted.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. He's a great shot. I don't think he posted a single video last year. Like, and he had kind of started talking about it. I think he also had some gripes with YouTube and just like the way YouTube was working. But yeah, I watched his videos were some of the first that I watched, just because they were like the most relatable to what I grew up doing.
Yeah.
Or some of my first waterfowl experiences.
Okay, so got a couple comments here. Apparently the lottery system, I was mistaken. The lottery system has been in place in the Dakotas for a lot longer. I could have sworn there was something, maybe they changed something up. I don't know. I don't pay that much attention, I guess, to South Dakota.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to try and draw for down there this year. I meant to last year and completely forgot. Also, like, it's kind of complicated. Like, I obviously, if you do a little bit of research, it's probably not that complicated. But like, if you just like type in South Dakota waterfowl lottery and then look and pull up the page, it's like 10 different zones. And it's kind of weird to try and figure out which zone you'd want to be selected for, especially as a non-resident hunter who's never been there before.
I'm trying to find the exact year that all these point system bag limits went away in each state. And there's not a lot of good data on it.
Mm. You want me to, do you have any more questions in there?
Yeah, if I can, you want to go through the chat.
All right, yeah. Figure out how to. GGW, yeah, Pamlico Point. I guess the cat's out of the bag on that one. Like, complete spot burn, just saying the name of it, but like, it was pretty obvious where it was. Yeah, never going back there again. Like, I have no interest in that circus. Like, I don't know how anybody finds that fun at all, honestly. Like, it was one of the most just I guess I can't say boring, but just like frustrating hunts I've ever been on. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, I went on a North Carolina teal hunt last year, and there's like, obviously teal migrate through North Carolina, but like there is very few spots that consistently hold teal. And that is one of them. And so me and like a buddy went down there and met up with a couple other buddies. We were like the second boat there at 2 a.m., but you can't enter the impoundments until 5 a.m. And so like 10 other boats show up, foot race in there. Everybody sets up within like 200 yards of each other, like people shooting towards each other, just a circus. So yeah, not fun in my opinion. Not, wait, just not worth it. Like, even if we had all walked out with full limits of teal, I would be saying the same thing. Like, just not fun. I don't want to go back. Husker Nation asked, is the bird flu pandemic over? Heard a lot a few months ago and folks worried about the conservation season might be dropped, but haven't seen much recently. I don't know. I haven't seen anything from it up here. From my understanding, it tends to not be as prevalent during the spring, like as birds spread out into breeding pairs. I think that's why there was talk about it affecting the conservation season, is because snow geese are one of the few birds that are still in those giant flocks in the spring. But I saw it firsthand this fall. I went down to Arkansas in November just for a couple days, and we were literally watching snow geese fall out of the sky. Like, and all the guys down there thought it was because there had been that big freeze up north in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and the birds were just really tired from flying. But then, like, a couple days after I left, you started to see Facebook posts about these huge die-offs on the roost there. Like, people were taking videos of just hundreds and hundreds of dead snows and dead ducks. So I feel pretty confident that what we saw was the beginning of that kind of spread on the wintering grounds down there of the avian flu. But pretty wild stuff. I've never been sitting in a blind before and watched birds fall basically dead out of the sky for no apparent reason. So had everybody kind of scratching their heads.
Yeah, I saw some. I saw some this year, and it had I noticed it in living ones when I was taking pictures.
Do you have a Winchester SX4?
I have.
Yeah, 20, you do. That's 20 gauge, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to do some more. I can't hear you. Can you hear me now?
I still can't hear you. You're muted. Oh, wait, I'm mute. Wait, I don't have any sound. Okay. Shoot, were you like talking at all there? Like, I couldn't hear anything you said.
I was a little bit.
I was just probably talking straight over you. My bad.
No, you're fine. So I was saying that I did notice bird flu in a few birds, mainly when I was taking pictures, actually, because you can see if they have a bluish film over their eye, they say that that's an indicator that they have the flu. And then if they're acting different than a typical bird would, that's a good indicator as well. But luckily, I didn't notice it that much. It was mainly in Canada geese that I noticed it in.
Oh, gotcha. Any news on your SX4 that shot high?
Yes, I sent that in. I didn't even use it last year. I sent it in last year, and they fixed it. There was an issue with the barrel. I just never really picked it back up again after I got it back, because I was just used to using the 20 gauge or the 28 gauge and the 12 gauge. But all my guns other than my TriStar 28 gauge are fixed and hopefully working now.
Very nice. Very nice. Minnesota Greg Outdoors asked, any Minnesota hunts planned? I'm not sure if that's for both of us or just me. I'll be hunting Minnesota just as much, if not more, this fall. Planning on staying up here. Probably actually, I don't know. It depends. Like, I really like it up here. The winter is pretty harsh and their season ends kind of soon. So I'll probably still try and kind of head south for December, January timeframe. But planning on hunting up here September, October, November, up until the freeze up. Trying to kind of branch out. The only gripe I had from last season, and it's only like a gripe on myself, is that like I only hunted like the same three spots up here all season long, just because like they were not a far drive and they were really consistently good hunting. But I do want to kind of try and spread out and do some different styles of hunting up here and explore some new territory. So you're going to make a drive up here, Matt?
I was actually meaning to talk to you about that. I know we kind of planned on it last year and it fell through, but I would like to get back up to get back up. Well, I've never been in North Dakota. Yeah, I'd like to get up for an early season goose hunt in North Dakota.
Yeah, I'm not doing early season goose this
year. Come on.
No,
I don't want to wait till September 1st.
I got spoiled my first year, and then like last year we got our teeth absolutely kicked in. And then this year they just got a bunch of rain out there. They had a bunch of snow out there. Like the thing about it is to have like a really good August, like especially because their early goose season runs until like mid September. Maybe even like third week in September, because that's when their duck season opens and goose season opens along with that too. But their early goose season, like you get molt migrators in September. So it's a very different style of hunting than the August hunting. Like the August hunting, you're just hunting resident birds. And the first year it was a drought year, so the wheat got cut super early. And then last year was a wet year, so like there was no wheat cut. And I have a feeling like maybe it'll be another drought summer. I hope not. But I have a feeling it's going to be another wet year up there. So, like, especially, I mean, maybe that last week in August will be good. But, like, that first week of the season, if there's no cut wheat out there or very little cut wheat, like, it just, the pressure is outrageous.
Okay. Well, you just dashed all my hopes on that deal then.
Well, like, there's other, no, I mean, just, I don't want to.
I actually have a wedding one of those weekends, so.
Like I would, like what I would say is like South Dakota has a August goose season and they have silage corn down there. Maybe they have silage corn somewhere in North Dakota. I've never seen it. I'd be much more interested in going and trying to hunt silage corn down there that like you pretty consistently know is going to be cut at a certain time of year.
Okay, so we had some people ask, okay, about the 28-gauge TriStar. Yeah, so first 28-gauge I ever bought was a TriStar Viper G2. It shot well enough. Actually has a high-pitched little pitch. After each shot, you can kind of hear it in some of the videos. Over time, though, it would jam up randomly, so you might shoot twice, you might shoot once, and then you couldn't shoot anymore after that. And there was... the shells would kind of get caught in it. There was a burr in it. The stock has since cracked on it as well. When I first bought it, I had to send the barrel in because the chokes that I ordered for it didn't fit. The threading was off, so they had to, you know, rethread them so it fit the chokes that I had. To TriStar's credit, their customer service is amazing. Like, easily some of the best customer service I've ever dealt with, and they were really timely in getting it back to me. But I mean, it's just, it didn't matter how much I cleaned it, didn't matter, you know, whatever. So I need to send the rest of the gun back in, but I bought my Benelli and I kind of didn't want to mess with it anymore. So hopefully get it fixed and then sell it so I don't have to worry about it anymore is my plan. Thomas, yeah, do you want to buy a 28 gauge?
No, I have one now.
Well, okay, this is news.
No, I told you about this. I bought one for my sister last year, before dove season. It's a Mossberg International, so it's made by one of the Turkish companies. Turkish made 28 gauge, basically a TriStar. Bought it for her. Like, she likes it, she uses it, but like my dad, like she doesn't really go hunting with my dad, so like I'm the only one that takes her hunting, so if I'm not home she's not going to go hunting. So I was like, can I just bring this up to Minnesota with me this year? Like, you're obviously not going to go hunting unless I come back to hunt with you in September. So I have that with me. I towed it around the turkey woods yesterday when I went out, so yeah, I'd like to shoot turkey with it, but pretty sweet little gun. Like, it's a sweet swinging, sweet shooting gun. I shot it in Texas on one hunt. So that was my first time using it for ducks. Or no, I shot it at Pamlico Point on that teal hunt too. So yeah. kind of weird to bring it back to there, but I've used it a couple times, but I don't know. I'm so used to shooting my 12 gauge. Like, I don't like switching. Like, I feel so confident and consistent with that Franke that shooting at actually anything else, like, puts me way off my game. Corey has a 20 gauge SB3. Love how that feels. Like, love how it swings. I don't shoot well with it. I'm so used to that Franke at this point that's I don't know. It's the only thing I feel really consistent with.
Well, part of that might be the rib system between the Benelli and I'm not sure what Franke's, how they do it, but Benelli has a higher rib typically. That's why everyone says they shoot high. It's just, it's the European versus the American model.
Yeah. Just, you got to float the bird. Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure Franke's are a raised rib too.
Okay. Oh, okay. I want to know who at Fox News watches Matt's channel.
Yeah, for real. That was wild. That was super cool. Congratulations. Any mainstream news isn't really cool, but like if they're like, you made it to the best of the worst.
I don't know.
Not to diss you.
I was just literally sitting at work and I get a notification on my phone, like someone tagged me in this video. They're like, did you know about this? This was like, I was like, no, that's pretty cool. That was really cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. Yeah. Sorry. I was not trying to diss you. Not a big fan of mainstream media.
No, I typically just watch sports or hunting.
Peter asked if I'm going to do any more float trips for geese. That's actually something that I'm like really weighing this year because, Minnesota has early goose season. They have an early teal season. It's only for like 6 or 7 days. So not a really long one. And then they also have a dove season. So like, I'm really thinking about staying up here, for September this year. And like trying to maybe get into North Dakota and go do some early molt migrator hunting over there. And like just kind of exploring the upper Midwest in September, just because it would be different from what I'm used to. But at the same time, like the past 3 or 4 years, I've kind of made it a tradition of doing goose floats on the Virginia rivers with my buddies. So it's going to be really hard not to go home and do those goose floats, but I'm really thinking about it. And there's even a possibility I might be way further north than Minnesota and North Dakota in September. That's like very up in the air at this point, but yeah, it could be way up in like the actual tundra possibly. So
that'd be cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I got like a bunch of things up in the air right now, but I'm sure I'll have to make a decision here before too long. Like, even if I don't go back in September to do the goose floats, I'll probably try and get my buddies to film them anyway, just because they're like just a fun style of hunting. Like, I'd probably just ask Nolan to film on his, because Nolan has a YouTube channel as well, fishing YouTube channel. So I'd probably just ask him to wear his GoPro and like pay him to send me the footage, because he'll go out there and catch 20 inch smallmouth and shoot a limit of geese at the same time. So pretty fun.
I guess I should mention, I went on a hunting trip recently. Well, kind of a hunting trip, I guess I should say. We had Game Hog's bachelor party. If you remember.
Yeah,
Game
Hog. I did want to ask you about that.
Yeah. So
Devin.
Yeah, we went down.
I missed him on your videos.
He said he's gonna come. I tell him every year, man, you got to come out duck hunting with me. He's big on the deer hunting though. He always has been, but he got bit by the waterfowl bug for a few years. And now he's back on the deer. So, but he says he's gonna come back out here for a couple hunts, hopefully. So, looking forward to that. But we got to spend a weekend down in Texas in doing a bachelor party hog hunt with him. First night we went to Fort Smith, Arkansas, And then we drove through the Winding Stair Mountains in Oklahoma, which that was really cool. I guess if anyone didn't know, I'm a big Turnpike Troubadour. They're my favorite band. Everywhere in that area, eastern Oklahoma, is like things they sing about in their songs. So it was really cool to be like, oh, I recognize this place and this place and this place. And then we crossed the border down into Texas. And went to this, we had this guide service, this hunting guide service deal. And I wouldn't really call it hunting because it was a high fence operation. But, I mean, it was still fun. Got some good pork from it. I used my 243 that I shot my antelope with and then a bunch of deer in the past. So that was really fun. The biggest hog was shot by Devin's soon-to-be father-in-law. And it was 217-pound boar. Huge pig. So we got some good meat. And it was just a fun time. But yeah, never hunted in Texas before and never been down to that area before. So that was really cool. Cross that off. And I don't know, the guide has a bass pond too. And I asked him, I was like, so do you get any like ducks down here? Like that's the first thing I asked him when I found out if he had any like, you know, any or when I found out he had some ponds and stuff. I was just really curious about that, and he said he really don't get much. A few gators.
Really?
Yeah.
How far were you in the tree area? You said like eastern Texas kinda?
Yeah, we were, where was it? I want to say Naples, Texas. Is where we're about that area, somewhere in there.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, because yeah, it's like it's weird how it works out there. Like Texas is, I think, such a cool state for waterfowl. Because like you get over in the eastern side of the state, and like it's kind of like it is on the East Coast. Like your farm ponds and stuff don't really have that many birds, and like there's a lot of swamps and natural stuff that they get on. Like, but versus like if you take like a 2-3 acre farm pond out in West Texas, like. It's 100% going to have ducks on it. Like just any sort of water out there is money. So I just think it's super interesting how it varies in one state, but Texas is absolutely huge. So makes sense.
Yeah, it was some of the most beautiful country I've ever seen. Lush is the best word I could describe it. I guess this area of Texas we were in, everything was just like green. There was pine trees mixed with like oak trees and then a whole bunch of brush. I mean, it makes sense how hogs could just like overpopulate there really easily because they can just hide so easily mm-hmm. in there. It was humid as crap too. I'm not used to the humidity and just, I was dying. It was 90 degrees each day, no wind the first day we were there, and like 90% humidity just killed me. Like I was like, nah. This is why I hate summer.
And especially- I think it's so funny, like the things that Midwesterners appreciate and complain about. Like, I don't know, just from like my perspective, like y'all think like anything green is cool and like humidity is the worst thing to ever like happen. Like, it's really funny, like how people across the country value things differently. I don't know. Probably like a really basic point, but I don't, it's just something I always find interesting. do you listen to Whiskey Myers at all?
Oh yeah, Ballad of a Southern Man.
What's that? You guys didn't stop at the timeout off 155, did you?
We did not. No. No, we went.
You know that's a real place, right?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Oh, you've heard it. Okay.
We didn't go there. It wasn't your typical bachelor party. We went hog hunting. We did go to a casino the first night in Oklahoma because there's like casinos everywhere.
Yeah.
Apparently now they have legal weed because there's like shops for that everywhere too. Like it was.
That's what I've heard.
There's like a green hut every other, like, I don't know. There might be more weed stores than McDonald's in Oklahoma at this point. It's crazy. But. No, we went to a casino. I did good. I only lost $13. So,
oh, very nice.
I'll take that as a win. But no, it was a fun time. Good to see Devin and all the other guys do for a while. So hopefully he makes that trip back out and get him back out on some videos, give him a hard time.
Yep.
No, we didn't need a license to hunt hogs in Texas. Answer that question. I would absolutely love to do a gator hunt down in Florida. Someone mentioned,
yeah, me too.
Solo Outdoors mentioned that. What I would like to do, and I don't know if the seasons, I haven't even looked at it for the seasons, but I'd like to go on a gator hunt and then get some like whistling ducks, if you know, if that's possible. Like, you know, I want to get all the cool stuff down in Florida. Maybe not a Osceola turkey. I don't really care too much about the subspecies, but definitely some whistlers, maybe a nice blue-winged teal, and a nice gator. I've never even tried gator, but I've heard it's really delicious. So
it's, I don't know. I've had it a few times. Like, I don't think it's bad by any means, but like, honestly, I think like any sort of like reptile, amphibian, like they're all kind of similar. Have you had frog legs before?
It's been a while, maybe once, I want to say.
Yeah, it's like all that like white, like they always say like it tastes like chicken. It kind of does. Like it's just like a white, pretty flavorless meat. Like it all depends on what sort of seasoning you put on it. Like gator is a little bit sweet, but it's all pretty kind of bland in the general scheme of things. We got a question. Have you ever hunted out of a layout boat? Have you ever hunted out of a layout boat, Matt? Oh, almost had a voice crack there.
No, I haven't ever hunted out of a layout boat.
Is it legal to hunt out of them in Nebraska?
Yeah, you could. And there's not a ton of places. You could probably do it on some of the like the big reservoirs and even some of the maybe like a nice farm pond too. If there's a push day, you can get like ringers and stuff. But as far as like sea duck hunting or something, no, I've never done that. I think it'd be fun. I think I would miss a lot because I do not shoot from that position. Like I can count on the number of times in one hand I've shot out of a layout blind. So I just hate shooting from that position. But I do, I'd be open to try it at least once.
It's really fun. Minnesota's super weird because like there's only three areas in the state where you can hunt out of a layout boat, and like there's a huge push of divers that comes through, but like there's, I don't know, 20 lakes within an hour of me that would be awesome for layout boat hunting. Like I would probably own a layout boat up here if you could do it, but the only way you can, like, there's, you can layout boat hunt on Lake of the Woods, I think on Mille Lacs, and then like part of the Mississippi River. And otherwise you have to have your boat partially concealed within vegetation, which like completely defeats the purpose of layout boat hunting. So super dumb. Minnesota is like great about that. Like probably the, like I love the hunting up here, but like they have so many dumb arbitrary laws, like just makes you shake your head.
Ooh, okay, this Florida trip might have to happen. That SoFly Outdoors just keeps adding to it. So no, I definitely want to get down there. I'm hoping I can draw my swan tag this year. That's my number one ticket on where I'm heading this year. I've got one.
Where are you gonna draw it for, Utah?
Yeah, so I got one preference point last year, whatever you call it. And they say as a non-resident you can draw with two. You can.
Why don't you just
don't know if it is how
pull a North Dakota one.
Well, I just want to
go. Because what are you gonna try and freelance it down there, or do you have contacts?
I've got some contacts, but I
guess
I want to go and I want to hunt because I want to just hunt swans. I'd hunt ducks too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to see like I've only been to Utah once. I want to see like the Great Salt Lake and just the mountains and stuff. I want to take all that stuff in too. So it's kind of a scenery deal, but also bag a swan and maybe some other cool ducks too. Well, I don't know. We'll see.
You know, you can shoot a trumpeter there.
Yeah, but if you do that, you can't shoot a swan for like another 5 years or something. If once they hit that quota, swan season's
done. It shuts down. Yeah.
So I don't want to be that
kind
guy. I don't want to be that
guy. You're kind of a D-bag.
Yeah. I don't want to be that guy.
The thing is, like, I'm not going to name drop, but, like, there's people on social media who have specifically talked about going there to shoot a trumpet or swan. Like, full well knowing that, like, if they do it, like, they're just adding to another bird in the quota. Like, shut the whole season down. Like,
so, yeah.
It's, like, pretty sad how selfish some people can be.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's, there's some of that with the sea ducks I've been hearing too. Like, you know, the Harlequin duck in particular is, well, I think they've shut down the season in like Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Because people were, you know, everyone wants a nice drake, which they're beautiful ducks, but it takes them several years to reach breeding age. And so everyone's going out targeting these drakes for taxidermy purposes or just for trophy purposes. And it's decimating the population. So as much, you know, that's, I want to be cognizant of that is basically what I'm trying to say. Like, I don't want to do irreparable damage by just because, you know, I want to, you know, hunt one of these. So I would definitely make sure it was a tundra swan if I was going out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like, I don't think it'd be that hard to tell. Like, I've never really seen them side by side before, but I've seen tundras up close and I've seen trumpeters up close. They sound nothing alike, and trumpeters are absolutely massive. Like,
yeah,
if you're like people who like claim a case of mistaken identity, I could understand at first light or last light, but like any other time, like, you just don't know your birds.
Well, and so when you do this, at least in Utah, you've got to take a swan test.
Yeah, I heard about that.
It's pretty, I mean, it does a pretty good job, I feel like. You know, like, the main difference besides size and the sound, but for a trumpeter between a tundra is the tundras have like a little yellow tick on their bill. So you got to watch for that, which, yeah. With the 28 gauge, I don't know. I don't know if I have full confidence in my ability. I mean, basically, you got to shoot them in the head.
You got to shoot them in the head anyway. Just shoot TSS. I would 100% take the 28 gauge.
Well, like, no, I'm going to take it, but I don't know if I'm going to go after the swan with it. I'll have my 12 gauge as well.
Nah, go after the swan with it. Like you said, you have to shoot them in the head. Like, even if you shoot them in the body with, like, obviously you might break a wing with like 12 gauge number two with number twos or something, but like, there's no point in shooting them in the body.
Yeah. You want like a, cause there are some guys that I've seen do it on YouTube, and I messaged them like, you know, what are you using? They're saying like 9-shot TSS out of a, when they use like a 28 gauge, some guys even use a 410. I was like, holy cow. But, I definitely want TSS to, no matter what gauge I'm using.
Oh, Tim in here with the jokes. Gosh, that's a good one. Dog, cat, and like people's grandma. I feel like I've seen at least a couple stories this year about them just like snatching people down into the neighborhood retention ponds down in Florida.
Jeez.
Yep.
Was it?
Hey, that's like,
I was thinking there was like a gator in Kansas last year that was loose, or a couple of years ago. Do you remember hearing
there was
about
like,
that?
No, I didn't hear one about that. I heard one about in like New York. Someone, there was like one in Long Island, or not Long Island, like Central Park.
I thought it was like, oh, they thought it was someone's pet gator or something got let go, and it was like on the Missouri River or something. But maybe I could just be totally botching that, but I could have sworn it was in Kansas.
Jarrett Beck asked, how are we brushing in blinds? Artificial or natural? Grass.
I use natural.
Yep. I prefer the natural stuff. When I was working down in Texas a couple years ago, we had this blind grass stuff. That's like an artificial grass. And I did like that. It held, like, obviously that stuff's going to hold up longer than natural cover, but I typically just try and brush in my blinds, like lay out blind, kayak blind, as early in the season as possible and then just leave it brushed throughout the entire year. Little tip for you. I'm guessing most people know this now, but the best tool, I think, end all be all tool for cutting brush is electric hedge trimmers or gas powered hedge trimmers. Yeah, you can chop a lot of grass really, really quickly with a good hedge trimmer. So if you are like doing A-frame hunting or hunting with layout blinds a lot, definitely something to invest in.
Okay, we'll get right back to that. I just found it though. Dead alligator found in Kansas River, March 21. So I wasn't crazy. I knew there was something like that. All these years blend together anymore, but yeah, there was an alligator found in Kansas a couple of years ago. But yeah, when you're one thing I do want to mention though, when you're going out with that natural grass, make sure it's not an invasive species that you're harvesting.
Typically,
I've seen a couple guys use for their A-frames and boat blinds Phragmites in my area, and that is just it's an invasive species. There's a native Phragmites as well, but typically what we have around is the invasive Phragmites, and it's really easy to just get a lot of it and brush your stuff in, and it looks good, but it is a pain on native wetland ecosystems. So just make sure.
Yeah.
And I think you can get a nice ticket if you're, you know, spreading it as well. So just make sure you're not using noxious weeds to brush your stuff in.
Yeah, the two that we always tried to avoid in Virginia were Phragmites and Johnson grass. Just like you said, bad on the ecosystem. Like, I'm guessing most farmers probably wouldn't like really get on you, but if they know their stuff and they like see you bringing, like knowingly bringing Johnson grass into their field, like they're not going to be happy. Be a good way to lose permission, just because then they're going to have to go spray more, whatever they spray these days, dicamba. Or is that pesticide?
Sorry, say that again. You cut out there.
Oh, what's dicamba, or am I pronouncing that wrong?
Dicamba. It's a super strong herbicide.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. So, is it anything like a Thule? From what I can tell, and maybe where's it? Public land waterfowler could help us out here. Thules are just like cattails, as far as I know.
Nah.
Are they not?
Thules are breeds? Thules are bull rush.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, I always thought, because if you've been watching Tyson's videos for a long time, he calls them Thules, always has. So like, I thought Thules were like some weird plant that they only had in California. And then like, I go hunting down in Texas, I'm like, oh, they have Thules here. Like, and then I'm like, wait, take a picture. I'm like, that's just bulrush. Like, you see that everywhere. Like, it's nothing special. The ducks do like it. Like, I love hunting out of bulrush. As long as it's not too thick, it makes great cover. And, like, you can kind of bend it and manipulate it. So, like, I've made, like, little gun holders out of it before and, like, been able to put my blind bag on it and stuff like that. Versus, like, cattails, you know, like, unless it's, like, a really, like, thick stand of cattails, like, you can't really use them to hold anything up. They're just too flimsy.
Yeah. Okay, so we got a few more questions in here. Y'all ever plan on hunting Michigan? Absolutely. I would love to hunt Michigan. I just need to make it happen at some point. You know, I watch our buddy Jordan's videos from up there, especially those early ones with all the trees, just different colors. Like, because that's part of what I like to do is hunt in like different areas that are just like really scenic to me. That's why I like going to the Sandhills. That's why I like hunting around mountains, like when I go to Wyoming. That's why I want to go hunt Utah. I like the scenery. So some of those areas like Jordan hunts up in Michigan, I would absolutely love to get out on a hunt like that. Maybe even get on some sea ducks. I've never shot a black duck, so I'd like to get one of those too. So that is on my list. And then, you know, get some like good walleye up there and there's a lot of stuff I want to do up in Michigan too. But yeah, that's definitely on my list.
Yeah, I'd agree. I might like, there's a couple really specific things I want to do there, like really specific areas. I'm not going to name drop, but like, I'd like to do some like big water diver hunting up there. The puddle duck stuff that Jordan does looks really cool, but like it looks very similar to what I'm used to on the East Coast. So I would probably, like, if I was able to get over there, I would be more inclined to go hit the big lakes and try and get in a layout boat or go hunt canvasbacks and other big divers doing that.
Okay. How are those Venari shells? They're so if you guys don't know, Venari is just another bismuth. They make bismuth loads. I tried some out this past season. They work. I think I had two and three quarter inch twos is what I was shooting, and I was just using them on Canada geese. And I mean, they worked. I've never usually I just shoot steel out of my 12 gauge, so I tried those, and yeah, I was they did the job. I don't know if I could say there's you know, the lower velocity on a bismuth load versus the steel load when I'm used to shooting in the 12 gauge might have been part of it, but they knocked them dead. I mean, I was satisfied with them.
Heck yeah. Well, what do you think? Should we do last call on any questions? We've been going for 85 minutes now, so I think this will be our longest podcast to date.
Yeah. Throw some questions in if you guys have any last call. Otherwise, we'll wrap it up, and you can re-listen to this on any podcast platform. If you missed the beginning, this is the first live Foul Front podcast we've ever done, at least to my knowledge. And you can find it on Spotify, Apple, whatever music, I think. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find it. And then I guess I do have to mention, Thomas, I'm creeping up on you.
Yeah, about that. I've been kind of family friendly. I've not been good about posting videos. I've said I was going to post videos and didn't. Like, haven't lived up to my promises at all in terms of videos. I do have a lot of videos on the backlog. So I've got like 15 hunts from last season. Those will be coming out this summer. Going to be doing Leroy videos. I don't love adding a camera into that element. Like, I'm already trying so hard to get so many things right with him that like having to worry about filming that too is not something that I find enjoyable at all. But like, got Leroy stuff coming, got for sure a bunch of hunts coming, so we'll see about you catching me. Should be a fun fall.
It's gonna be fun.
I love me and Matt, I think I can speak for you when I say, like, we love the friendly competition. Like, it's incredibly lighthearted. Like, we'll probably go back and forth in it. Like, from an outside perspective, it might not seem lighthearted, but like, it's just kind of fun, like bunch of banter. And you know,
I like
that. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter a lick, but it's like, it's fun.
That's what when Jordan and I were doing those races, that was absolute fun. Just having all the, like, making the memes and the stupid little videos and stuff. That was just so much fun. So I had to make one for Elliot, and I had to make one for Titus. So, I haven't made one for you yet, but we'll see what happens.
We'll see. I don't know. I'm really looking forward to putting out these Texas hunts. I got 5 hunts from Texas from this year, and 3 of them are probably like the 3 best mornings of bird action I've ever been under. Just like incredible stuff. So I'm really, really pumped for those.
Okay. One last question, and then we'll call that a podcast and live stream. If you guys like these live streams, you know, let us know, and we can definitely do more, maybe get some other guys on here, do some guests and stuff. What was your first duck, Thomas?
Mallard Drake jump shot it off a creek, and I think it was about 12 or 13 years old.
Mine was...
What about yours?
Give me a second here. Mine was a Mallard Drake, and he had that on his leg. That's the only one I've got, and that's like... It might be... It's close to 20 years now. It might be 20 years since I shot him. So... That was the only one I've gotten since, duck or goose, but a banded mallard drake. So, yep, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. Well, probably a good place to wrap this one up. I just want to say, like, we appreciate everybody who stuck with us through this live stream. I know, like, you know, 8, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock if you're on the East Coast on a Thursday probably isn't the most ideal time for most people, family and all that sort of stuff. So. Appreciate everybody who had time to tune in and watch and drop a question or two.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Be sure to check us out. We have a Facebook group for the Foul Front podcast, so if you want to go over and join that, appreciate that. And you can check out all the other podcasts on, like, kind of like what I just said, Spotify and all the other places you can listen to podcasts. Be sure to check out Thomas's YouTube channel, Hoke Outdoors, and mine, High Prairie Sportsman, and we'll catch you on the next one.
See you.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
I'm Will Cooper, host of HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from HuntStand Presents. Anywhere, anytime, and on any device.